The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I've been reflecting about the role of thinking in our practice, and I certainly noticed how the thinking world has been kind of shifting, changing in my own practice, in my own daily life. And I've also been teaching some of the introductory courses in various places. And what I kind of realized was, you know, whether you're new to meditation or you're experienced meditators, sooner or later, we will notice the forces of the thoughts. And oftentimes, there can be very powerful forces of thinking that kind of get us caught very often in the world of fantasies or memories and stories. And I remember when I first began to practice, and the teachers would ask me, you know, and they notice, what's going on in your present experience, and how much you might have noticed that you're thinking. You know, without knowing, I kind of said, oh, I think, I don't know, maybe 60-70% of time I'm thinking. But then, as I paid more attention, and I realized, oh my God, I feel like 90% of the time I've been drifting around in the thinking world. And that, you know, that can be small, random thoughts, and then that can be just really juicy thoughts that kind of keep you there for a long, long time. And then so this noticing, you know, how much this mind is engaged in various forces of thinking was kind of eye-opening. And I oftentimes nowadays when I teach the intro mindfulness classes, and I realize that oftentimes that we all have to celebrate that we actually now know that this is happening, because most of the time we don't even know that this is happening. And the thinking world, a lot of time leads the way in how we live our lives. And I like this quote from Dhammapada. It says, all experiences are preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. And it's a way of a mind really kind of leads the way how we live, how we act, what we say, how we say it, and our emotional world as well. And so it's a big part of our experiences. And so for me, you know, before I began the meditation practice or the mindfulness practices, you know, I wasn't paying attention to how the forces of the thinking have shaped me in the way of life, how I lived my life. And oftentimes it's very easy to blame outside, you know. It's him or her, they are doing something not right, or the weather is not good, or, you know, the road is not good, and it can be all kinds of things that is not quite right outside. You know, the bosses are not good. But if we look very carefully within ourselves, and for me, I begin to see just how compulsive my own mind can be, that kept me in the kind of repetitive, sometimes I think of it's like a ping-ponging, you know, myself has this thoughts ping-ponging back and forth between what I like, what I don't like, and creating a whole world in front of me that can be stressful and kind of challenging. I just name a few of those patterns that for me I began to notice. And as I began to teach people, I also hear people kind of naming them. Daydreaming, plotting, planning, judging, comparing, calculating. And so there are a wide range of patterns that may have been formed over the course of a long time. Maybe driven by certain beliefs, ideas, or certain emotional forces underneath of it. And for me, I began to notice how much I calculated about everything. You know, if I stand in the grocery line, glancing on the prices of different things, I began to calculate. I'm not even buying those things, but I began to calculate how much did it cost to buy this, this, that, and is it cheaper than this and that, and how much I calculated from going to from one place to another. You know, is there a different way? I mean, we all have maps nowadays. You know, we don't have to do that, but I just began to notice. Wow, just. You know, passing by gas station, even if I don't need the gas, there's still something in my mind to kind of just calculating. And I began to notice, wow, this is quite overwhelming. Whether or not there is a need to do so, the mind is engaged in this pattern. And as I reflected, and I realized, and it's probably a conditioning that happened since when I was very young, you know, maybe an elementary school kid, because we grew up in, I'd say, kind of a poor household, and in fact, overall, the environment is that of maybe borderline poverty, and I think I grew up with a very thrifty mind. I remember when I was very little going to the little shops to get a soy sauce for the family, and we used to have the bottles we take and to the shop, and then they fill the bottle and then we bring it back. We never sold the real filled bottles those days. And I would bargain to get that filled just a tiny little more. It was fascinating when I kind of reflected. Wow, you know, ever since I was very little, I've always been doing this because of just, you know, how we lived. And so that conditioning has been kind of so deep in me that it's almost like a memory muscle. You know, it's kind of the thinking muscle just works like that. But as I began to pay attention to the impact of this compulsive calculations all the time, it was really exhausting. I felt my mind is could never be restful, and my body is often tensed up, kind of just because, you know, the mind is always engaged in this form of thinking. And so the mindfulness practice really kind of opened my eyes to this part of my life. I began to understand the impact of it. And so that really kind of opened up the process of relaxing, letting go, and release. And now I really kind of enjoyed standing in the grocery line and not to have to calculating which line is the shortest and just, you know, go on one and allow the mind to feel spacious and wait till it's your turn. So I think probably all of us can relate to some of this kind of patterns in our lives. Whether, you know, we're experienced meditators or the beginning meditators, because some of the forces can be really deep inside of us. Another pattern I think many people would relate to is something like a self-criticism and comparing, and there's always something that we're lacking, that, you know, not quite good enough, not but up to the bar, and that can be quite deep inside of us. Our attitude in relationship with our meditation or activities in life. And that can be voices like, you know, why can't you do better? And, or you should. You should be better. And so it can go on and on. So, now how do we do? What are the ways that we can work with this kind of habitual forces in our mind? So I recently have been looking at this particular sutta in the middle length discourses. This is called the removal of distracting thoughts. I thought, wow, great, just in time. And so the Buddha taught five ways that allow us to work with removing distracting thoughts. And in particular, these are called distracting thoughts, and some people translate it as unskillful thoughts, and some people just call them thoughts. You know, so it's interesting kind of how we relate to them. But those are the thoughts that are driven by the underlying forces of greed, hatred, delusion, and then underlying forces of a wanting and not wanting, or getting confused. And so that those are the thoughts of, and oftentimes if we look at the strong habitual patterns in our mind, they are kept coming back, they kept coming back because they're colored by the underlying forces of fear, aversion, and some form of wanting or some form of confusion and delusion. And so we can look at this carefully, you know, for ourselves if that's the case. For me, certainly, if I begin to notice a certain repetitive patterns of thoughts or sticky thoughts, they are pretty much all the time related to some force of this, I guess, the three forms of poisons. And so, the Buddha introduced the first pattern, which is this. I interpret as when our mindfulness and concentration capacity are not quite so stable and strong, and the strong forces of unskillful, unwholesome thoughts can really shake us, you know, left and right, and we're kind of pulled by it or pushed by it. And so in those cases, you know, the thoughts might be like, I don't know, kind of big waves or tornado or storm. And it's we may not have the capacity to really just kind of let it go or calm it. And so in these cases, the Buddha suggested that if we have to think of the good thoughts, use those to help replace the waves of unskillful thoughts. I think some of you might relate to this, because even in our circles, we've taught that if there's strong fear, one of the approaches that we can do is to use the thought of loving kindness as a counter force. And we may not be able to stop thinking altogether, and so the thinking engine might still be running, right, and then still somehow generating, cooking the thoughts out. But we can use the skillful thoughts, the thoughts of loving kindness, the thoughts of, oh, kind of just remembering to keep coming back, you know, using simpler thoughts, that are more conducive to calming the thinking engine, kind of slowing it down rather than keep it spinning faster and faster. And so those are the thoughts that it can help us to kind of becoming a little more collected and settled. And so that's a one approach that the Buddha introduced, which is replacing the unskillful thought with skillful and wholesome thoughts. And thoughts of compassion, thoughts of caring for oneself and others. And, you know, those are the thoughts that are conducive to our well-being. And then you know, we practice with that kind of approach for a while. And sometimes that might just help us calm down, and the thinking might slow down a bit. And sometimes the habitual tendency can still be quite strong, and the thought might still coming back, even when we're kind of replacing the with the good thoughts. And so in this case, the Buddha introduced another tool, which has to do with, my sense is that at this time, our mind might be a little slower, you know, because we've done some approach to kind of calm it, even though the forces are still coming back. But now, it may become enough that we can begin to really investigate the thoughts that are coming back. So face, now we allow the thoughts to ripple through us, but we begin to investigate this thinking process to see, oh, how are the impact of the thoughts in us? How do we feel it in the body? And that's that the sense of, now we don't have to just, you know, immediately change it to something, but rather we look at this very carefully. And we look at this carefully in terms of a whole process, and kind of understand the thinking process. When we begin to see the impact of this kind of thoughts in us, and so for me it was noticing how exhausting it was, you know, to keep repeating the patterns in my mind, and how stressful my body feels, that I began to say, oh no, this is really not useful. So we begin to know the danger of these thoughts. So that's the second way, which is to now really look at this very carefully and understand the danger of keep engaging in it. And I think for me, it was also once beginning to know the danger, it also opens up some other approaches. And the third approach that the Buddha introduced was that now that if you know the danger, occasionally it may still come back because, you know, it's a deeply conditioned pattern. But now, maybe it's okay to simply drop them because you've understood and this is no good to us. And if the capacity of becoming mindful of it is stronger, and then now we can simply just allow it to flow through us, you know, without having to do much at all, kind of letting it go. The analogy in the sutta is actually that of turning away. So it's like a person with a very good eyesight. We know that if we're actually fixated our eyesight on the things that tend to get us caught, we just don't look there. You know, you have a good eyesight, but you're going to turn and look at other things. You know, it's a... this works when we understood that those are the consequences if we actually really engage in them. And For me, and that's important to know also, because there are times that I've applied this tool when I didn't quite understand the impact of particular pattern on me. And if I just simply drop it, it comes right back. Because, you know, the mind isn't quite deep in its psyche, isn't quite willing to really let it go. And so this form of really investigating, understanding it is important aspect of this letting go. And so I remember for me, for a while I had noticed how much I plan, in particular before going on highways. You know, I had to plan a lot of different ways of getting on highway. And I would notice this, I have to drop, but then it'll pop up right away. And it was later on I began to really pay attention to what was happening. I realized there was underlying fear that was rippling. And that fear is the one that kind of trickled or was driving the forces of a planning activity that is happening. So when I began to see that, I began to feel the impact of all of this, I began to finally be able to really let it go. Before this, it was difficult because the mind didn't quite understand. Because planning might seem, you know, so ephemeral and then didn't seem to have that much impact on us. But when we begin to really understand the conditions that for it to come along and the impact, and we now can, you know, the whole psyche and the physical being is ready to let it go. And so I do feel that some of this approaches we may have to really engage to understand when it might be an approach for us to leverage it, to use. And then the next approach that Buddha introduced seems to me that this sequence has is a sequence that has has a gradual way of evolving. So it feels to me that the person may have now a stronger and stronger capacity of mindfulness and concentration when they kind of go through this sequence. But it may be, you know, different for different people to interpret this. That's kind of how I interpreted it. So the next pattern, next approach that the Buddha introduced is that when you have investigated and had let go some of the repetitive thinking patterns, and if they still come up in you, which, you know, it does happen, you know, sometimes even in our meditation practices that we've done this repeatedly, letting go certain very sticky thoughts, but they still pop up in us, and you have investigated, you know the impact, and you are ready to let it go. And so in that case, the Buddha said, well, then pay careful attention to still or quiet the formations of the thoughts. Now, this is a tricky word, the formations, that different people interpret it differently. And so for me, it's a sense that you pay very careful attention before you launch into, before the full-fledged thinking, storytelling are materialized. Can you catch it before it becomes a full-fledged thought? And so the formation, the constructing before the actual construction actually happens. And so that requires kind of more attentive awareness and stability and more continuity to look. I think some of you might have this experience where when you're meditating and there are certain thoughts you feel like it's about to come, but it hasn't quite come. There's sort of a movement, whether it's in the body, felt in the body or in the mind, that it's about to come. But if you just notice that, the thought may never come. It's just that movement, it's like a little ripple, just went away. But that requires us to be really in tune with what is happening right there in front of us, and to kind of be able to calm or still the formations of the thinking. I've also seen other ways of interpreting this. Some are talking about noticing the conditions that are from which the thoughts are coming about, which is kind of understanding the sources from which the thoughts come from. And so it could be that you may notice the underlying emotional tone that kept the thinking kind of being the fuel for the thinking process. And so like fear, apprehension, oftentimes is the underlying mood or atmosphere that causes excessive planning or excessive thinking to happen. So can we drop in there to kind of notice that and allow that emotion to kind of flow through us more freely? And maybe when that happens, then the thinking kind of quiet down. You know, the thinking is built upon those. And so that's another possibility. And I'm sure there are other interpretations of what this stilling of formations might mean. But I'd invite for you to kind of explore what that means to you as well. But this is the fourth approach that Buddha introduced. Just catch yourself right kind of before this thinking becomes a big story. And this point also relates to a teaching on the four right efforts. I think some of you might be familiar with this, and that is the four right effort. There are kind of two sides, and it, basically the formula is something like, if the unskillful, unwholesome activities that haven't happened in you, try to avoid for it to happen. You know, it's kind of like this approach of, you know, stilling something that are unwholesome and avoid having it to happen at all to you. Now, if the unwholesome, unskillful has already happened, then stop it right there. So that's kind of like the one before, which is just kind of drop it. If you catch yourself in a wind of it, can you just drop it? And then the third aspect of the right effort is if the wholesome and skillful and that it's already there, maintain it, keep it going. Because if you're mindful and steady and collected, keep it going there. And then if they are not quite there, allow it. Keep it there and allow it to grow. And if they haven't come, allow the wholesome to come. And then that's kind of the four right effort. So I feel like this set of approaches has some parallel to the four right effort, the teachings on the four right effort as well. But even then, it's possible that even when we are kind of so in tuned with even just the very beginning of the thinking, the unskillful thought might still pop up, which is true because there are really deep-rooted tendencies in our mind. For example, the sense of a conceit, conceit of I am, you know, conceit of I, me, mine is so deeply rooted in our psyche, in our being, that it can still pop up and thinking like, huh, here, you know, huff and puff me, and I'm doing meditation. I'm really good right now. You know, there can be this kind of thing that are very, even very subtle, but it's very sticky because they always kind of stick the head out. And so that might still happen even when we're, you know, strong in our mindfulness and concentration. And so the Buddha had introduced in this sequence of five, the last one is to, that's very visual, it almost feels violent, but, you know, clench your teeth and put your tongue against your roof. Use your mind to crush the mind. Really stay there. Do not let it happen. Do not let it have a chance to come. So the image is very visual. So let me see if I can pull this and read this part. Yeah, as I said, with his teeth clenched and his tongue pressed against the roof of his mouth, he should beat down, constrain, and crush mind with mind. So for me, reading this line kind of invoked the image of the last night before the Buddha was fully enlightened. He had made a very strong determination. He said, I'm going to sit here. I'm not going to get up until I am fully awoken. I'm fully awakened. And Amara came, right, and trying to seduce and pull him out, and said, no, Mara, I see you. I'm determined. You know, I am not going to go. And so that was the image that evoked in me, and I feel that and this approach sometimes does have a place. And in particular, this is the last one in the sequence. I feel that this is also an approach when your mindfulness and concentration is quite strong, and you're able to really stay there and really have a lot of strength in the mindfulness and concentration capacity to really just being determined and committed to this and not waver to anything that comes in front of you. And that's the image I have. And I feel that this approach probably won't work when our mind is already wavering and kind of being pulled this way, that way easily. Because if we just kind of said, no, don't do this, I'm going to stay, we're already not staying very steadily with the present moment. For me, it just backfires because it's just ping-ponging back with all kinds of emotions and other dynamics that pull me away. And so I felt like this is an approach that have to be kind of exercised carefully. You know, we really know for ourselves if this is the time to use this. And sometimes people do use this on retreats, you know, like there are strong forces of certain patterns coming up. But you're in this environment where your whole life is meditate with this. And so maybe that's the time that, you know, you can really make a strong commitment to just really stay there and face it. But I don't know, you know, it could be that in other situations and times that we can also do, and because the image also evoking me is, And sometimes you say no with a very strong voice to the kid who really wants another candy. You say, no, you're not going to have this. So you committed to this after all the other approaches you tried that, you know, hasn't really worked. And so there is a place for this. And so, so that's, you know, what I have in mind to share in terms of working with habitual patterns of thoughts that are harmful potentially to ourselves and others, and how we work with it. I think we can open for some questions, and I'm going to stop recording right now.